This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And I am known as the last of the red hot book lovers, because I hope to turn all of you into book lovers too, because I have a really exciting program today. This is going to be a hot one. I have two book buzzes to celebrate the holidays, and we have books to recommend for you, and a special promo for Jim Lamb's new book, Herding Butterflies. So we'll have that a little later. But right now, I get to turn to one of Joy on Paper's favorite, absolute favorite authors, because she won the Patsy Award in 2022, and she is, well, let's just say, she will go to the ends of the earth to promote her books. And the author of the Ex-Whisperer Files series, Gabrielle St. George. Hi!
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. It's just so wonderful to talk to you always. You know, I remember, I remember the day that I read your first book. It's called How to Murder a Marriage, Give a Man Enough Rope. And when I started, you start with a list. And I just love lists. I am a list person. I must have five lists around here. Not that I always finish them, but I have them. And, of course, you had top six most stressful events. Okay. You know, you've got divorce there. You've got movie. You've got victim of crime. Now you can add a seventh one, standing on a volcano to promote my book.
That is so true. Yes, that I would just return from Iceland, and the volcano did not erupt, but they're still predicting could be any day, any minute. With all the world leading volcanologists have been there for 2 months, with all their insanely advanced technological equipment, and still no one can really guess what Mother Nature's got up her sleeve, can they?
Exactly, Mother Nature will always surprise us, but I was not actually surprised that you said, what the heck, the warning that it's going to explode. But boy, Gabrielle St. George is going to go there. She's like, you know, fighting the dragon. She's going to stand there and promote her books, right?
Right. It was, so it's a literary festival in Reykjavik, Iceland, and it's called Iceland Noir. So crime fiction, which of course they're famous for. Well, they're just famous for writing and books. But so many huge authors were there. I was speaking on a panel. There was Neil Gaiman was there, Dan Brown, Louise Penny, Hillary Clinton was there, all kinds of bits. Hillary Clinton wrote a book last year, I don't know if you read it, with Louise Penny called State of Terror. Did you catch that one, Patsy?
Yes, I did.
Okay, I didn't. But so they were there, and actually, I sent you the picture of me and Hillary. I was invited to the Canadian Embassy, actually to the ambassador's official residence. They were having a reception for Louise Penny to honor her, and I was a Canadian author. There was only maybe one, I think there was only one other, might have been two other Canadian authors at the festival, so that's why I was invited to the reception. But it was great fun. But even listening to Neil Gaiman and wow, and Dan Brown, so inspiring, so fun.
Well, you know, this is so exciting. When I talked to you before, you know, as soon as I heard, I knew you were going to this event, and I thought, well, this is exciting. It's something actually that I would like to attend. And I was thinking, would she do it? And I said, yeah, she'll go. She's, you know, a girl from Canada who lives on Lake Huron and dances. I think you do moon dances, and you never do tell us whether or not you're sans clothes. But there you are, and you headed out for Iceland with that strong belief that you would be okay.
Right, and you know, while I was there, you couldn't really feel them in Reykjavik, but it was that we're only like maybe 20 kilometers from, we're kilometers there, from the Grindavik, the town where the volcano is, the town they had to evacuate. But there was, the government said about every 10 hours, about 1,000 earthquakes. So it's just, but the Icelanders, not fazed at all. They're just so used to it. They're just, that's how they live. They're a really different kind of people. Very cool. Very interesting.
So tell us about, well, you didn't feel the earthquakes when you were out there at all.
I mean, just slightly, but not, you know.
Not terrible. They weren't shaking the buildings.
But I mean, actually a lot of, particularly a lot of American authors who were going to attend did not come. And my flight was kind of half empty. And people said theirs were too. So a lot of people just didn't come. They were, you know, nervous. But yeah. I'm telling you, these Icelandic people, they're tough as nails. It's not a thing to them. They just carry on. So, yeah, it was really,
well,
really cool.
In general, what was the weather like? What did the sky look like? What was it like?
Well, I mean, it's winter there. It's that they hold Iceland Noir at the darkest time of the year. So there's only a few hours of sunlight a day. It's right, and in the summer there's only a couple of hours of darkness, so it was pretty dark most of the time. The northern lights were dancing. I see the northern lights where I live too, but you know, so we saw that. It was really beautiful. And some of their authors who talked and who I met and spoke with are like, they're top selling authors of Iceland, and I don't know if everyone knows this, but the Icelandic culture literally revolves around books and reading. There's, I think, more published authors per capita in Iceland than any country in the world. As a matter of fact, they say one out of every four people there have published something, even if it's like a thesis or book or whatever. And they read and read and read. They completely revere authors, writers, and literature. And on Christmas Eve, I'm going to do this with my family this year and start a new tradition. It translates, I certainly couldn't say it in Icelandic, which is a very difficult language, but it translates to the term book flood. And they only publish their many, many books once a year. And it's right now, right before Christmas, because their tradition is on Christmas Eve, everyone receives books and they all spend Christmas Eve reading their books and eating chocolate. And I think that sounds like a divine Christmas Eve, and that is what I'm doing this year with my family.
Well, that sounds actually, that's very much what our family has always done. You know, in for me, and you know, northern Michigan gets pretty cold, and we have these long, long winters. So that's what we do up north. And again, always around the holidays, we get books and we read. And one of the traditions we established was reading the Christmas Carol, because I love that story. I can read it. Well, we have read it over and over for, I'm not going to say old, I am. Let's say a lot of holiday reading. And I think one of the things is if you read that, the Christmas Carol out loud, it's so much better than the movie.
Oh, I know. And it's such a great tradition that, and it's so beautiful for kids to grow up with books, especially celebrating them, you know, and at a time of holidays, it just makes it even that much more special. But, you know, one thing that I learned, and it's such a, like I said, it's such an interesting culture, Iceland. It's so small. I took my four kids there who are grown. They all live in Europe, but they always come home for Christmas and in the summer, and I go there once, twice a year. 2 years ago, in 21, I took my kids. We went to Iceland for Christmas for a couple weeks, and it was very dark, and it was cold, but not as cold as Canada, so we were okay with that. But, you know, everything there revolves around reading. And there's only in Reykjavik, the capital, which is the only really populated city, I think there's only about 150,000 people. And in the whole country, there's less than 400,000. So my sons, who are, you know, in their 20s, when we are going to Iceland, they're like, wow, we're going to get on the apps, you know, the dating apps, Icelandic girls. And it was so funny because the main dating app there is to tell you whether or not you're related to the person you're thinking of dating. That's how small it is. And it's apparently, they that some of the authors explained to me that as far as anyone knows, it's the only country in the world that when it was like colonized, which I think was by Norway, they sent, you know, a few thousand people there, nobody had lived there prior. So, you know, everywhere else, North America, Australia, you name it, there were indigenous folk living there. But no one wanted to live in Iceland. They still can't grow food there. It's just greenhouses. So it's just a culture based around fishing for food. So they said that up until like literally like 100 years ago, so it was colonized and populated 800 years ago. But for the first 700 years, they said no two people played musical instruments together. There was no opera, no theater, nothing. But what they had was storytelling and then the written word. So that is why their culture completely revolves around books and literature. Isn't that so cool?
That is, it's amazing. Now, of course, the you know, they speak, you know, I've tried a few words in Icelandic and you can't, it makes Finnish sound easy. They read in English, so you know, so much. So it's a great place for authors to go.
Yeah, I mean, most people speak English, albeit with some with a pretty thick accent. But there's loads of Icelandic literature that's not translated, but some that is. And even on Netflix, there's quite a number of crime shows based on Icelandic series. They're always dark, very dark, and filmed all kind of in gray lighting and things with really dark stories. But that's basically Scandinavia for you, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Definitely. You get into Swedish literature and it's very dark and the shows. But so let's talk a little bit about this reception because it's pretty exciting.
Yeah. So it was very fancy. And again, not the Canadian embassy, the ambassador held it at her official residence, which was extremely beautiful. And just like amazing food and champagne and wine and just lots of milling about with really interesting people. And yeah, Louise Pay and I chatted for a while, told her what I was going to write next. And it was really interesting. And then, yeah, Hillary showed up and with her security detail and people, she chatted to everyone. Everyone got photos. And yeah, it was really special. It was really exciting, to be honest.
Well, I love Louise Penny. And I've, as a matter of fact, not too long ago, I had the narrator for her book, last book on. And it's just so much fun always to read her books. So that was a thrill. And then meeting the ambassador and you know, this is a yeah. wonderful, wonderful way to really promote yourself and promote Canada as a Canadian author. So, wow.
Very true. But, you know, Patsy, you got to tell me, come on, I didn't read it. So State of Terror, like out of 10?
You know, I really love Louise Penny. I really do. And I think I've read almost... Well, I think actually I've been reading her since she started. It's sure. It's okay. It's pretty good. Yeah, that's what I will
say. Was it not your cup of tea? Was it not your cup of tea then?
Well, no, you know, I think you get used to Louise Penny. Actually, it's like you reading your books. Your books have such a style that, well, I love, of course, that they start with lists. And so I have this... immediacy when I into your book, and your writing style is so beautiful. What I love about your writing is sort of a little bit noir, and I always find something to chuckle about, smile about, And that's why I found that your books are the kind of book, you know, many times you read a mystery or you don't go back and reread it. It's not like every author, you know, Agatha Christie, you can read them over and over. And, you know, let's say not everybody's books can be reread over and over. Your books, I can read again, because what I can do is, like, if I'm running down to the pool and I just say, let me grab a book. And I have done it, that I picked up How to Kill a Kingpin twice, just going down to the pool. I didn't want anything serious. You know, I just wanted to smile. And that's what I love about your writing, that it has that character. You have made Gina Malone so real to me, as you know, I'll let you explain who she is, because when a character becomes so real that you think you know her, it's like I know Lord Peter Wimsey, and I know his mother, the Dowager Duchess. I know them and I love them, and so I just relax. You know, it's relaxing to be with friends, because they become friends. And I think Gina Malone would be my friend too.
Yeah, that's so lovely. That's such high praise. Thank you for that. And a lot of people do say to me that, gee, I just want to be your friend. Or I just feel, you know, when I was reading the book, that I was like with a friend. And I guess that is a really high compliment, because I did want to create a character who was relatable. I like a cozy. It's not my favorite genre, but I certainly respect them. But you can take a 50-year-old woman in a cozy and, you know, Gina Malone is not like in the back of a bakery fighting off villains with
a Rolex. Explain a little bit about how you developed her, because that's exactly that she's in, you know, 50 years old, and it's not that typical, stereotypical that we think of, because she's a heck of a character.
Yeah, she's also, you know, self-deprecating. It's written in the first person, so she's the one doing all the talking, and we're inside her head, and she is self-deprecating. She does reveal her flaws. So I think that makes her real. The one thing about the books is they're crime fiction. They're considered mystery. You know, at the Agathas, they consider them cozies. You know, at Killer Nashville, they consider them a bit thrillers. And for some readers, that's confusing. And some readers don't like genres being, you know, lines crossing. But a lot of people do. And I really believe that is changing in crime fiction. I think that people are more open to, like, less formulaic and more open to blending genres and looking for it. I'm really finding that now. It's more and more accepted. Whereas not very many years ago, even a publisher would say, you know, if it's crossing genres, the bookstore's not going to know what shelf to put it on, so it's not going to get put on a shelf and there's not going to be any sales. But it's different now, and I'm really relieved about that, because I just find it more interesting to write, too, more fun for me.
Well, she's more, as you said, more real, somebody that we actually know. And I love her sense of humor. There's just so many things about her that make her a character that you want to read about and, you know, have this relationship with her. And so you're both of the books, you know, the How to Murder a Marriage was, I just adored that book. That's why I right away I signed you up for when the next book came out. And then How to Kill Kingpin, which I got such a kick out of, because it was the top nine reasons to skip your high school reunion. And I had used all of those nine.
Yeah. In book number 3, How to Bury a Billionaire, I'm not quite done it, but I'm way past the beginning with the list. But if memory serves me, it's the top 10 reasons women kill their spouses. That's the list.
so start yeah, with
a, it's a fun
that's
one.
It. I mean, that's what makes it so much fun. And I've been talking to a lot, and I agree that there is this sort of crossover because, you know, I suppose partly it's language of which sort of words you can use in a way, because in a real pure cozy, you can't use any naughty words, which makes
And if there's any romance, it's definitely closed doors and violence is off the page. And that's all fine. You know, a lot of people don't want to read those things or imagine those things really. But you know, thrillers and suspense, as we know, they can be as gory as the writer wants to make them. And I'm just like kind of in the middle. Like there's a little bit on there, you know, a little profanity, things like that, but not, you know, not too much.
Yeah, no, I mean, you don't want to get too gross. I mean, because I get a lot of books, and sometimes I just turn them away. I'm not up to it. You know, when you're reading, you want a certain amount of suspense, you know, suspend with reality. You want to be into the book and be comfortable, I think.
And for me, honestly, my main goal, is to entertain, the reader. And I think that's a lofty goal. Like, I think people want to be entertained and deserve to be entertained. And today, it's not that easy to keep people entertained. So that's my goal, to keep them entertained through the whole book. And, you know, how many on Netflix, the line that has all the, continue watching for Gabrielle, all the shows I've started and not finished, it's like the biggest section for me on Netflix. So they don't keep me entertained, you know, or they put me off for some reason. So really, I think being entertained, creating art just to please people, I think that's a high calling. And that's really what I try to do.
Well, you do it. And, you know, I want to talk a little bit more about some of, well, your writing, and particularly a really great sentence that I love. Now, I'm going to play a book buzz, which is a promotion that we do for authors. We want people to remember books and to hear about new books that they should read. So I have a wonderful correspondent, Devon Miller, who does reviews for books for kids. We're going to play his book buzz, and I have a few commercials, and then we're going to come back to you, and we're going to talk about one of my favorite sentences from one of your books, okay? So hold on.
Okay.
Book buzz from Devon Miller.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety-Tock Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. The holidays are here, so do expect Santa Claus to show up at your house, sliding down your chimney with gifts he has in store for you. But the question is, how does Santa go down the chimney? And what if you don't even have one? These are the questions asked in the book titled, How Does Santa Go Down the Chimney? The book was written by Mac Barnett and illustrated by John Clausen. How Does Santa Go Down the Chimney asks delightful questions about how the big man in red is able to deliver gifts. How does Santa get in the chimney? Does he get stuck? What happens if there is no chimney, and what does he do then? These are all questions that we wonder at times, and they're asked in such a delightful way that continues to enhance the curiosity of the reader. The author and illustrator duo found that kids don't usually care so much about answers, so instead of answers, the author and illustrator came up with theories to the question. For the illustrator, he tried to draw the story with a bit of an edge, considering that Santa creeping into one's house in the middle of the night is not just a tad bit scary. While the idea of Santa creeping into one's house might seem a little scary, the story wipes those thoughts away in a delightful read-aloud that makes it seem that it might be harder for Santa to get in than we might have thought. How do you think Santa goes down the chimney? This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my special guest, Gabrielle St. George. And we are talking about her series, The Ex-Whisperer Files. She's working on book 3, but I wanted to talk to her about a sentence. So, hi, Gabrielle, you back?
Hey, Patsy.
Okay. Well, you know, I think it's very clever that you start a book off with a list, because then you don't have to worry about that very, very first sentence that every author, you know, sweats over and worries about so often. So you start off with a bang with your lists. I love them. But when I was looking back at your books, and as I said, I did go back and I've reread both of them at least once, twice, because I find them relaxing and because I like Gina. But there's a sentence that you have. I'll read it. It's times like these when a gal's got her ex-husband hiding inches away from her new boyfriend and a murdered man in rigor on the floor beside her that being good at lying would sure come in handy.
Right.
I love it.
My editor said she thought that might even be a spoiler, but I thought, no, I think it just tells it all. You know, and it's true, she's not good at lying, but it could come in handy, couldn't it?
I think it's so intriguing. It's not a spoiler because it's intriguing. You want to know, first of all, you want to know something about the boyfriend, and then you definitely want to know about how that body got there.
And I think for one sentence, it tells us that, you know, she's still, even in this obviously somewhat of a critical moment, she's still maybe funny or can find some humor in it. But she's got an ex-husband, it tells us that. She's got a new boyfriend, it tells us that. And she's in some pretty deep trouble if there's a dead guy laying next to her. But in one sentence, it kind of gives us quite the overview.
That's exactly what I it just sticks in my mind that in one sentence, you can just give the germ of the story, and then the reader is intrigued by the three aspects of it exactly. Why she got an ex-husband, what happened to him, what's the new boyfriend like, and who's this dead guy? And I love it. I think it's a beautiful sentence.
And without saying it really, we know it must really be not a great situation since they're all in very close proximity to each other.
It's so visual. I mean, you can almost imagine, and I'm sure there's a lot of women who have ex-husbands and boyfriends, and I could see them thinking, yeah, if those two were here and I had a body on top of it, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things, she turns 50 in the first book, and the second book occurs a couple weeks later, and the third book just a couple weeks after that. So it's all compressed time-wise. But I'm really surprised and heartened by how many young women enjoy the books, like women in their 20s and early 30s, and they love her even though she's another generation. She's 50. And I didn't really expect that. I thought it was mostly going to appeal to middle-aged women. And I've had quite a few male readers, too, who, like, enjoyed the book and enjoyed it. I guess maybe a little insight, getting inside a woman's head, maybe that's interesting for them, too. A realistic kind of woman, you know?
Yeah, exactly. As you said, because you're sort of crossing over, it's adult enough that it would appeal to a man, and the crimes are definitely, we all have to have a murder, of course. So those, you know, sort of cross over to both sexes, I think that's easy. But the fact that young women like it, I think partly it's because they have might not have an ex-husband, they have exes, and they have exes, and they have exes, and then, you know, so I think, and Gina's got that, she has that bounce and that attitude about life, I think, that is really refreshing.
Yeah, and her ex in the first book is, you know, he's quite scary. I think he's quite scary, and a lot of the readers are like, ooh, this, like, I don't read, I got a few reviews that, like, really enjoyed this book, but, like, don't read it alone at night in a cabin in the woods kind of thing, even though, you know, whatever. But as I'm moving forward, her ex-husband is becoming more comedic relief. I didn't want him to leave, and I didn't want to just, you know, you can't just kind of keep this boogeyman going forever that she's always looking over her shoulder, like, books later. Because I think that's when you call the Hell's Angels and spend your $5,000 and make him disappear. But I think now he's kind of, she's still, you know, he drives her crazy and she doesn't want anything to do with him, but he's hanging around. But I've brought him gradually more into the comedic element, which I think is working pretty good.
It is. You know, what's wonderful when you start a series, now, of course, you had tell a little bit about what you had been writing before, because then you've based a lot of it on exactly in this book. And it's exciting that you've started a series, which I think, I mean, we're headed, you know, book three, book 10. I see us down the road at book 15. I hope that you were still, we're still interviewing at that point. So, you know, it's really fun that you've had this chance to develop this series.
Yeah, I'm certainly seriously playing with the idea this year, 24, of writing a standalone, more of a thriller or domestic suspense. I don't know. I don't know if I'll scare myself too much and not get good sleep, but I think being in Iceland at the Iceland Noir Festival, it did kind of inspire me, the darkness and just all the thriller writers. It did kind of inspire me, and I do have kind of a good idea jumping off point if I'm courageous enough to write that book this year. So it would be very different.
Well, you know, I was just thinking about when Devon Miller did this story about the chimney. I was thinking about you have a 1930s house, so I bet you do have a chimney.
Oh, I have chimney. So that's my little cabin in the woods by the lake, by Lake Huron.
That's where you write?
And I do both. I also, right now I'm at my farm, which is only 20 minutes from my cottage, my cabin. And it's a farm in the middle of big fields surrounded by deep forest on the Saugeen River, which is the second biggest river in Ontario after the Niagara. It's a big, big river. And the whole farm is along the river. So, you know, no one's going to hear you scream here either. So both are kind of isolated.
Now, of course, it was last year that your kids flew in a blizzard?
Yep. Yes. Okay, now, Patsy, I didn't tell you my idea, did I? For the thriller?
Okay. Oh, maybe I've got a hint here, nugget. Huh?
Yeah, you're kind of onto it. You're onto it.
I'm onto it, because that was pretty exciting. Your kids land up sleeping at the house of the taxi driver, I think, right?
Yeah, so they flew in December 23rd, and I' 3.5 hours north of the Toronto airport, so I drive down to pick them up, and of course, they never usually come in on the same day, so it's 4 trips down, and they leave on different days, 4 trips back, but two of them arrived a couple days earlier, and two were flying in the 23rd, and a couple of days before that, there was a huge snowstorm called for. I mean, record-breaking snowstorm. And so I thought, I don't want to drive and get caught in that. So there was a bus, and I bought them bus tickets. And then 2 days before the storm, the bus canceled all service, even 2 days before it started, because it was going to be that bad. So I hired, there's no taxes, I hired a private driving service to pick them up at the airport and bring them up here. Was not cheap. And the guy said, yeah, no problem. I'm dropping people off at the airport. I'll get them, bring them up. It should have been 3.5 hours, you know, maybe 4 hours in the kind of sketchy weather. But I mean, after 9 hours, they were only halfway back here and couldn't, the only vehicles they saw the whole way were in ditches. It was complete whiteout, blinding snow, just like you can't believe it. And finally, when they were halfway, this is where this driver lived. And he said he couldn't go any further. So he's a stranger. So good enough. He took my two kids, my two sons, into his home, just him and his wife, and they just kind of slept in the basement, and they were starving.
Okay, you know, all of this is very intriguing, and maybe I had a psychic connection to you, that I had a feeling that was a perfect idea, especially sleeping at, I think we have a hint of a very special book coming up. Well, Gabrielle, it's been such a joy to talk to you. Thank you for joining me today. I loved hearing about your trip to Iceland, and we'll have you back as soon as you have a release date for the next book. You let me know, okay?
Of course, and thank you times a million for having me on. I love chatting with you. I love your show. You're such a rock star in the book world, and you do so much for authors and readers, and everyone just adores you, of course, and I am so grateful for you. Really appreciate you so much, Patsy. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful, wonderful Christmas. I hope you don't have a blizzard this year.
Yeah, you too. Happy holidays, Patsy. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to have another book buzz right now, a book that you could get for Christmas for yourself or as a gift, a book buzz from Bria Burton.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2022 First Contact novel, Prodigals, by Alan Dean Foster, with stellar narration by Fred Berman. Now, let's download the book buzz. Extraterrestrial invaders make first contact and demand resources or threaten to attack major cities on Earth. 5 representatives are sent to negotiate, including Devali Dev Mukherjee, a NASA consultant specializing in alien life forms. The requests for simple staples such as corn are easily met, and Dev is welcomed inside their alien spaceship to observe their advanced tech, such as food synthesizing equipment which delivers anything Dev requests. A variety of alien species work together on board with hundreds of automatons, but no one can tell Dev why a sudden alien emergency sends the spaceship out of the solar system with him and his companions on board. When the captain refuses to return them to Earth, Dev searches the ship for answers, and he uncovers secrets their captors have been hiding. A chance discovery leads Dev to a moral dilemma, and he's left questioning everything he knows, while the group looks to him to find a way to get them safely home. But he fears none of them will ever see Earth again. Alan Dean Foster is the acclaimed author of movie tie-ins for Star Wars, Alien, and Transformers. He was awarded the IAMTW Grand Master Scribe Award in 2008. He is also a best-selling science fiction and fantasy author in his own right, including the popular Pip and Flinks novels and the founding of the Commonwealth series. Besides traveling, he enjoys listening to both classical music and heavy metal. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
Well, thank you, Bria. I love that. And it would make a great gift book for anybody who loves sci-fi. Now, in a minute, I'm going to actually read a poem from Jim Lamb's book. It's a new book called Herding Butterflies and Other Poems. But right now, we're going to play a very special promo that we've done for this book.
Looking for inspiration? Looking for something that will intrigue you? Then this book is for you. Jim Lamb's poems start out as caterpillars, creepy, crawly, and raw. Then a miracle happens as they transform into colorful, bright, and conspicuous works of art. You can find Jim's new book of poetry, Herding Butterflies, at Amazon.com. It's the perfect gift for the book lover in your life, even if it's you. Herding Butterflies, the perfect holiday gift, available on Amazon. Get Herding Butterflies.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Big Ed, for that's Big Ed's voice. For all of you who don't know, that's a wonderful voice and a wonderful promo, and thank you so much for doing that for us. Now, I just have to say, for me, Jim Lamb is somebody so special. Sometimes in life, you just meet a person at the right time, and when I was just starting off here at Joy on Paper, I wasn't sure what I was doing. I didn't know how long I would last. I didn't know. I had no idea. I think some people thought, you know, I might last a month, because I was very shy when I started this program. I cannot believe what a shy person I was. I was always the person in the background, always the person who was sitting probably in the corner reading a book. But somehow when I got into the studio, I don't know, maybe it's Big Ed's smiling face, I don't know what it is, but something, when I got behind the microphone, suddenly I found a voice and I could talk, and I could talk about what I love, because at that point I had already read 10,000 books in my life. And since then I've read, well, I don't know how many, so many. This week, just yesterday, I got 17 books. 17 books. So it's going crazy here. I really have to expand the program. I have to be on more days a week. I can read that fast. I do. But, you know, I just need more time on air. So that's one thing I'm working on now, to try to expand the program. But Jim Lamb has been behind so much of, sort of, he's now in the shadows, but I want to bring him out into the sunlight, because his book, Herding Butterflies and Other Poems, is just a lovely book. It's on Amazon, and it is, you look for J.S. Lamb. So he uses his initials, but it's called Herding Butterflies. And it is not just a book of poetry. It's also a book filled with his lovely drawings. He loves to draw. And this is what, you know, what I tell everybody. You don't know what's going to happen in life. But if you are doing something all along the way, whether you decide to write poetry, whether you decide to just doodle and then start really realizing that, wow, I can draw on something beautiful, you can do that. There are so many things, whether it's doing crafts, or whether it's doing, you know, building a boat like Leroy Jethro Gibbs, who I always have an obsession with. But Jim draws, and he draws beautiful, just beautiful illustrations for this book. And it is really, I want to tell you, I am so grateful to him for all that he has done for Joy on Paper, because he came, you know, as he's my first big fan. And then later on, I get another one, Andrea Hiotis, and I'm just thrilled that she's been journaling. But along the way, Jim has done our press releases, and he's just come out with a press release with the 10 recommendations for gift books. And I will be talking about that on Thursday. I will be going through the list. And it's available on my website at radio-joyonpaper.com. But I want to, again, thank Jim Lamb for everything that he's done. And I would like to just show you how beautiful, as I mentioned with Gabrielle de St. George, one sentence can tell a story. And so often, one poem can tell a story. And there's a just, and it doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be long. People, poetry is just a celebration of words. Putting words together, and not difficult words, not words, you know, for, that you have to look up in a dictionary, the everyday, ordinary words that you use. And so I'm going to read Jim Lamb's A Christmas Poem. It's just tells a story. Ornaments on a tree, Hallmark movies on TV, reindeers playing hide and seek, Frosty trying not to peek. And what on my face appears? Mile-wide smiles and salty tears. That's it. That's a poem. And in that little poem, it says so much. The joy of Christmas. It tells something about the feelings that are there in his heart as he thinks about Christmas. And it's a beautiful poem. And it's just one of wonderful eclectic assortment of poems. Some are funny, some are sad. He has a wonderful sense of humor. Some are deeply serious, talking about his parents, talking about friends. But each poem is beautiful, and each poem is illustrated with one of his lovely drawings, and it is called Herding Butterflies and Other Poems. It's available on Amazon in both print and ebook versions, and you can get it there. It's J.S. Lamb, Herding Butterflies, and we will be playing the promo often so that we will remind you of this wonderful, wonderful book. And it's a perfect gift book. It's just a little book. It's very colorful. The cover is beautiful, and it's a kind of the kind of book that people will just pick up over and over for many years, because you never know what mood you're in on a specific day. You might want something funny, you might want something serious, and you might want something that will make, well, thought-provoking, because that's also what poetry does. It can open your mind to thoughts and ideas and thinking about life and thinking about, I don't know what everything means in this world. And it's very difficult now. We are all sort of going crazy. This is a time that we have to stop and just take a moment to try to find some beauty in life and try to celebrate the season. And one of the books that I think, if you're looking for a great book for this season, it's a book by Carol J. Perry, and it's called High Spirits, Haunted Haven Mystery. And it's a book set, Haunted Haven is a series set right here in the St. Petersburg area. It's a delightful Florida mystery, cozy mystery. And this one has, as always with Carol J. Perry, it's just a great mystery story in itself, but it's set at Christmas time and Christmas lights on palm trees and Santa hats on plastic pink flamingos, which is standard in Florida. You see it all the time. There's no snowy landscape, but there's beautiful white beaches, miles and miles of white beaches. So you can get out there in your Santa hat and take some pictures, because that's a wonderful way. I love my brother and his wife, Tom and Debbie, were here several years ago, and they brought their Santa hats, and they went out on the beach, and beautiful white beach there here in Clearwater area, and that was a wonderful photograph, and I'm just looking at it right now, and I just want to I just want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas, because when you see that photo of them sitting, they came down from Michigan where they could have sat in the real snow, and they decided to sit here on the beach. So again, it's a wonderful book, High Spirits, Haunted Haven Mystery. It's book two in Carol J. Perry's series. Carol J. Perry she's an amazing woman. She just celebrated her 90th birthday. And when she was the first guest in the studio. And I am always grateful to her, because I started the program and I was on, you know, the radio, but I was talking to authors in New York City, and it's real, you know, and I love it, but boy, oh boy, to have somebody in the studio was really exciting for me. And so Carol J. Perry came to the studio and we talked about her first book in her Witch City Mystery series. And that was 9 years ago. And in that time, she has written 13 books. Well, she's written the 14th book, which is now with her publisher, but she has published 13 books in the Witch City Mystery series, which is, I mean, it's amazing at any age, but she's just tremendous. And then, as if, you know, 13 books in one series wasn't enough, she started Haunted Haven. And as I mentioned, this one, I think, is so much fun at Christmas time to get this book, High Spirits, because you will be in high spirits when you read this book. And again, special thanks to her for everything she's done for Joy on Paper. And I want to mention also Rita Moreau. Rita Moreau is I was thinking about her as I was talking to Gabrielle St. George, because Rita is that crossover. She's Cozy Mystery with her series, the Ghost and Camper Kooky Mystery series, but she's a little bit sort of expanding into another area. And that's what's beautiful about being a writer. And for all of you, and again, special thanks to all of the NaNoWriMo people who, you know, my listeners who joined NaNoWriMo this year, 9 of them finished their books, 50,000 words in 1 month. And you can do it. You don't have to give yourself 1 month. You can give yourself a whole year. Just think, if you sit down every day and write, you know, just write 10 pages, at the end of the year, you have a big book. Anyway, everybody, have a wonderful day. Bye-bye now.